This is the Podcast Replay. This Podcast Replay is brought to you by the finest racks in the business. Pallet Rack City. 305-424-8547. That's 305-424-8547. Pallet Rack City in Hialeah. It's the company you need when you want your warehouse sporting the finest racks in the business. After all, who doesn't love a great rack?
Welcome back inside the paint. Ira Winderman is getting set to be on the road with the Heat and getting set for the big game coming up against the Chicago Bulls. And Ira, I want to talk about what we saw over this past week, and in particular the game in Minnesota. And the game in Detroit, it felt like a team, it was one of those games where you're watching the Heat and you're just kind of waiting for them to wake up. Mm-hmm. And they didn't until Tyler Hero went out there and kind of saved their bacon a little bit in the second half. The Minnesota game was one where you're watching it early on. You're like, okay, well, they're going to be fine. You could tell that they're the more polished team. They're not the athletic team that Minnesota is. And then something started turning there in the third quarter. And it was a combination from what I saw, Ira, of, you said, Minnesota being the more athletic team. They were able to, when Miami had some holes, some lanes, they were able to be explosive enough to exploit that. You have a big man, a really versatile big man in Karl Anthony Towns. Anthony Edwards, I think, energized the entire world, much less just that arena, by the dunk that apparently wasn't because of the offensive foul call. And yet, Ira, the thing that I came away kind of scratching my head a little bit was Jimmy Butler was challenged in that game. Anthony Edwards gets in his face. You have the entire arena chanting about a certain broadcaster and some connection to Jimmy Butler, and you know, feel free to go and search that yourself. But I mean, it was one of those things where if you're Jimmy Butler, like you're being challenged out there, and it's the one thing that Jimmy Butler, we've always seen him respond to. And then Ira, he goes out there in the fourth quarter, he puts up a goose egg. You look at his stat sheet in the fourth quarter, no points, again, one assist, and that was it. That was the only thing you could see. So he gets challenged, and then all of a sudden, he does nothing in the fourth quarter. So, Ira, I ask you this. Did the Heat let their emotions get the best of them in that game to where the combination of the officiating, which I understand, you weren't getting the calls that you wanted, Minnesota being more physical and more athletic and pushing you around, was that a case of them being overly emotional, or did they not just meet the level of emotion that Minnesota was putting out there and do the things that they need to do in order to win that game? What did you see?
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to tie that into another name, Clay, and that's Kyle Lowry, and even what he told us. And he said, look, if I didn't have those five fouls and I was out there, it wouldn't have got that emotional because we still would have had the lead and they wouldn't have been able to gain that momentum. So again, it's a different Jimmy Butler this year. Jimmy Butler was Jimmy create your own shot Butler this year, last season, sort of do it on your own. However, this season, he even said, I have more of a scoring bent. Kyle's getting me in the right position. I'm able to play a little bit more in that direction. I think when Kyle was off the floor, again, Gabe Vincent statistically had a good game. I think Gabe Vincent defensively competed, but he's not a setup man. He's not a point guard who gets you in the right spots. And this is something, and I wrote it in my Winderman's View blog after the game, another moment when they're without Kyle and they have no direction. So when you have no direction, all of a sudden is Jimmy forcing shots sort of out of his wheelhouse because he's been moved out of there, Clay. So all of a sudden, when you are playing 19, 18 games in a certain style, unlike the last couple of seasons, more as a scorer, playing off of Kyle Lowry and Kyle's not there, you're in trouble. Again, this goes back to a common theme on our Pallet Rack City inside the paint shows, and it's this. They don't have another setup man point guard. Gabe Vincent played his best ball in that game, Clay, when he was playing alongside Kyle Lowry, mm-hmm. when he's able to set up more in his shooting rhythm for his three-pointers. So I think what happened to Jimmy was a function of they have offense A with Kyle Lowry, pretty good offense. They have offense B without Kyle Lowry, pretty not good offense. And I think Jimmy got caught up in that, and his shooting spots and his driving lanes and all that weren't there because Kyle wasn't setting him up. I think that he'd need to have a plan B. I've said the plan B is bringing in another experienced playmaker. The Heat have said their plan B is going back to Jimmy facilitating or going back to Bam facilitating. I contend it's hard to flip the switch. And Clay, that might have been the best example. Look at where the Heat were with Kyle Lowry in that game. They had built a 12-point lead. They had built a 7-point lead. They were in good shape all these losses, even in Washington. This team has been leading late in all these games, but it's just a matter of closing them. I don't know if the Heat can close without Kyle Lowry. I love having a player that's that important to your team. It means he's meaningful. It means the acquisition was the right one, but there has to be a plan B. You're talking about giving Bam Adebayo time off because of the knee. I'm saying Kyle Lowry's 35. He's going to need his own time off, and I don't see that plan B. It's really weird. They're kind of rudderless without Kyle Lowry. The entire game changed on that offensive foul, the illegal screen they called on Kyle. Then it got to the point where Kyle got his sixth foul, which was a foul. Eric Spoelstra challenged on the hope and a prayer that maybe there'd be some video angle that would save him. So he knew how important it was. Remember, when Kyle went out with the sixth foul, it was a 3-point game. So in theory, it was going to go right to the finish. Might have been an out-of-bounds call, might have been a block charge. But Eric Spoelstra used his challenge there because he realized none of that would matter as much as keeping Kyle in the game. There's just not a plan B there. Again, I know, folks, this is not Pallet Rack City from a week or two or three or 4 weeks ago. But like I've said, every other player on this roster, to a degree, starter at least, is replaceable in that. If Bam goes out, okay, you can play Dwayne Dedmon. If P.J. Tucker's not available, when he's healthy, you have Markieff Morris. If Duncan Robinson's not making shots, Max Strus can make shots. If Tyler Hero is not playing, perhaps you're getting a little bit more from a Gabe Vincent or someone like that. There's no playmaking replacement for Kyle Lowry on this roster, and it showed at the end of the game. So you're looking at Jimmy Butler not scoring. I'm looking at no one there helping setting Jimmy Butler up for something more than those crappy jumpers he wound up settling for, not even getting to the foul line.
And that's a great point. And regardless of what it is, so what you're saying, and I think this kind of answers the question that I had out there. You can look at the emotions of that game. You can look at the swings and the fact that the Heat are getting, I mean, the Heat's manhood was challenged. I mean, you had Anthony Edwards getting in Jimmy Butler's face and Jimmy barking back at him or staring him down and getting back in his face and all that. But none of that means anything if you don't perform in the fourth quarter. So it was like, it was two different elements is what you're saying. The emotion was one part of it. But then the strategic element of not having Kyle Lowry out there and not having a viable solution when he's not out there. So it's not so much that the emotion overtook them. It's that, hey, when Lowry is out, it's a strategic thing where the drop-off is so significant in their play. And Ira, look, all you have to do is you go back to the game they lost in Indiana. They were lost the entire game offensively. And you mentioned the other night, it was more staggering because you saw it in game where Kyle Lowry is in, things are clicking, he goes out and they lose the game. So, you know, I think that's something that we watch for the rest of the year. And Ira, I've said this, and I think I've said this since before the season started, the concerns about this Heat team, I think our best case scenario for this team has been validated in that when everything is clicking, and when everybody is healthy and you hope that they're that way come playoff time, they can beat anybody. They can absolutely beat anybody. And I would contend that they are contenders when they're all healthy. And
they're tied for second place in the East. The sky is not falling, people. They just had a rough loss against a streaking team that happens in the NBA. They have a 6-1 home record. Clay, what this means more than anything is get a damn top four seed because you are so much better at home, or at least are showing it at the moment, that that's something you absolutely should strive for. We've spoken about just avoid a top, you know, 7 seed or 8 seed and being in the play-in, but you can see how home court is mattering also. And again, in all these bad, quote, bad road losses, they're leading in the fourth quarter. They've shown enough through 36, 38, 40, 42 minutes that they can play with all these teams. They're not just bringing it home at the finish on the road, and that's the next step for this team also.
And by the way, Ira, I would contend that it's been one of my concerns for a while. Concern isn't the right word, but I need to see this team win a game in that scenario. And again, and I'm not talking about like the game against Utah where like you're leading by a lot in the third, fourth quarter, and then they chip away, and then all of a sudden you have to get a defensive stop at the end. I want to see this team go out there and win one of those games where it's a back and forth, the lead changes hands in the last 2 minutes a number of times, and then you're having to come up with a number of different late game plays that you succeed in executing and you get the shots that you want and you win the ball game. We haven't seen that yet, but I think that's a different discussion.
And that was the end of the game in Washington on Saturday when Jimmy Butler dribbled to nothing at the end of the game, and they wound up at nothing, and it took a heave by Bam with 0.2 seconds to hit the back iron. They had their chances in that game. That was closing time. That was clutch time, and they didn't answer the bell in that one. You're absolutely correct.
And by the way, I would argue in that game, too, that that game did not bother me as much as the Minnesota game, because the Washington game, I want to be honest, when the refs are doing a terrible job, whatever, that Washington game, Ira, there were points in that fourth quarter where they let a lot of Washington stuff go. I remember there was one play distinctly where the ball's rolling at half court. Jimmy Butler would have had a clear, fast break the other way. Bradley Beal dives and swipes and takes out Jimmy's foot, knocks him on the ground. The refs don't call anything. And it was like, okay, that one, I remember at the end of that game and just feeling like, man, that stunk that they lost that one.
And here's another one for Angry Media Man, since we're going to play that role until we go out of this segment right here. I don't care. I don't give a rat's butt what the NBA said on the Spencer Dinwiddie travel.
Oh, yeah. Give me a break.
You're talking five steps. You're talking left, right, left on the pivot foot. I mean, Ruth Riley Hunter on the Heat postgame show pointed it out, and she doesn't make excuses. She's a former player. She knows you're not going to get all the calls. But to me, if that wasn't the most egregious travel in the first place, I mean, that's all we did was ask people in the postgame about that. And then for the NBA to come out and say he never had the gather. So literally, if I get this correct, Clay, and I'm not a referee, but I play one on the Pallet Rack City inside the paint. If I go down the court and juggle the ball, I never have to dribble it, and I can keep running because I've never had the gather. Then he winds up changing his pivot foot, but they're saying the change of the pivot foot was on the pass. There was like five things you could dissect on that play. Again, it's a one-point game Heat ball if they call the travel. Instead, Kuzma to the line, two free throws, a three-point game. I, matter of fact, I'm not sure, Clay, and we can actually track this on our weekly shows here at Pallet Rack City Inside the Paint. I'm not sure I'm going to see a more egregious call that I disagree with the NBA ruling than that travel. I bet you if you put Spencer Dinwiddie on the lie detector and said, okay, sit there, answer this question, did you travel? I traveled, I admit it. Of course he traveled.
And of course, look, Ira, we're not sitting here complaining. It does no good to sit here and complain about officiating, days after the fact.
Right.
The point I'm trying to make is, that game didn't concern me that much. You had just beat them the night before in Milwaukee, was it? Or in Miami, was it? 2 days before or the day before? 2 days before
You beat them on Thursday, lost on Saturday, right?
Yeah, and so like that game didn't concern me as much. The outing in Detroit, I'm sitting there like, what? They need to wake up. That's okay. It's one game. They'll be fine. The game in Minnesota was where you start to wonder, okay, what are the answers to this? And I think you've given some very valid answers to what we saw in that game, and now they get a chance coming up against Chicago to really make a statement. We'll get to that game coming up in the last segment here. But getting some of the questions here, Daryl, as far as the game against the Wolves, part of being a team is stepping up if your main guard guys are out and in foul trouble. This is when Bam and others need to do more. Look, I think, and again, Daryl, I know you're staying on this point about Bam. Bam's not himself right now. And like, he's not going to make excuses. The team's not going to make excuses. But the guy's going out there, and he's giving everything that he's got. He's just not the mobility is not what it needs to be right now, which means you're either going to get a lesser Bam because he's physically not where he needs to be, or you need to rest the guy. And so that's where I think Ira's point about they were a rudderless ship when Kyle Lowry went out of that game. To me, that was the bigger point there. Getting some of the start pups. I think a John Wall buyout would help out a lot. And Ira, we've gone through the machinations of this on previous episodes of this show. But yes, a buyout would help a lot. The Heat also have to get on the other side to where they would be able to afford without going into the tax, or they have to just decide we're going to go all in and we're willing to go into the tax for this team. But I would wonder, and you tell me if there's any sense of this, I would wonder if they're starting to see that their solution of making Jimmy do more facilitating when Kyle's out, making Bam do more facilitating when Kyle's out, do you think there's a sense that they're starting to see that that may not be the best solution for this team moving forward?
I don't. Matter of fact, I think the opposite. I think maybe that's something they get to in practice. Maybe they sort of have Kyle practice and non-Kyle practice and say, hey, we're mature enough. We're professionals. We should be able to adjust just like a football team adjusts between the running and the passing game if they have to, or just their defense between blitzing and non-blitzing. Maybe they need to have first 30 minutes Kyle practice, second 30 minutes non-Kyle practice, and have both of those games in there and say, okay, today we're playing 21-22 ball. Now we're going to try some, you know, 2019-2020 ball and just go in that direction. Maybe that's what they need to do also, so they have both at their disposal. Again, like we mentioned in the crosstalk with Big O at the top of the show, is maybe you need to have more than one way to win once opponents start doing the scatter report and know who you are, or else opponents are going to wait till Kyle's out and boom, try to seize the moment there.
But by the way, that's what good teams do. And that's what great teams do. And I will say this, I'm not saying that this team isn't a great team, but what I'm saying is they're still figuring themselves out. Sure. And they're still, they need to figure out what that way is.
At the quarter pole. Absolutely. They're the quarter pole of the season. Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to get to the upcoming schedule coming up, Ira, because this is a big game coming up in Chicago. And it's one of those where the Heat have risen to the occasion in some of these measuring stick games so far this year, which makes you feel good about what the playoffs could look like at this point. Ira, we're going to break down this game and what we expect to see from the Heat coming up in Chicago. That's coming up next right here on Inside the Paint.